I'm Eric Hudson-Aberg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 132 for the weekend starting 28 August 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like underpants to protect your package from harmful Wi-Fi.
No clickbait on Tech Central. On Talk Central this week, we talk about Telkom sub 50 Rand wholesale ADSL plan.
Also this week, we talk about Alan Knott Craig Jr.'s new business, Herotel, and ShowMe's to make Africa debut.
Before we get to all that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back just after this.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Eric?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thank you. So, I don't know if you've been following the news this week about Telkom. Really interesting moves they're making. Sub 50 Rand, for the first time, sub 50 Rand wholesale ADSL package to ISPs, which is going to allow them, the ISPs that is, to introduce sub 100 Rand ADSL packages into the market.
That would be amazing, and it's a good counter to fiber that we're seeing sprouting up everywhere now. I think.
This is
becoming competitive.
This is really aimed at the low end of the market, but interesting move. Also, those aimed at those on the edge of the Telkom coverage areas where you can't get much, like 5, 6, 7 k's from an exchange. But I think a smart move from Telkom. Less than $50, excluding VAT. Chatting to Pranesh Padiyachi, is the MD of Wholesale Services at Telkom, and he says he fully expects that ISPs are going to come to market with 5, 10 gigabyte per month packages for less than 100 Rand a month.
Nice.
Now, that's obviously excluding the mandatory line rental, analog line rental, that I think more and more people are questioning why does it exist. And when I asked him about that, he actually said that they're giving serious thought to about how they can deal with that in the future. So I think we may see some news coming down the line, probably not immediately, but somewhere down the line, on doing away with that mandatory dial tone service.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But I suspect that'll mean that the average copper charge, he's talking about introducing a single copper charge for ADSL or for telephony broadly, and doing away with a dial tone service if you don't want it.
But I
think the fee will be more than the basic analog line rental fee, but probably less than the ADSL line rental fee that you're paying at the moment. And it's happened all over the world, so it's inevitable that it happens here.
But
very aggressive move by Telkom. Interesting move to introduce a one megabit product at such a low price. And I think what the market they're really going after actually is the market that's perhaps fairly new to smartphones. Probably doesn't necessarily have a computer at home, but is using one or more smartphone devices or a tablet to get online, and is relying on mobile data to do that. And I think people are finding more and more, especially if they want to access things like YouTube, but also even just browsing through Facebook and things like that, which are becoming more data-intensive services, higher resolution pictures, lots more video, all that sort of thing. I think people are finding they're chewing through these mobile data bundles at a hell of a rate, and it's getting very expensive. And the mobile operators, and particularly the big ones, and I point my finger directly at Vodacom because their prices have stayed stubbornly high for a long time in data. I think that people are finding that... they're wanting to consume data, but they can't afford it, or they're paying more than they want to for mobile data. And I think what the big play that Telkom's got here with this one megabit service is to try and get some of those people onto the fixed line network and using the fixed line network, because then you get a 5 or 10 gigabyte a month package for less than $100 a month, obviously, again, excluding the line rental. And then you're starting to look at a cheap way of getting data on your smartphone and on your tablet, and not having to pay the much higher fees that the that, or certainly some mobile operators are charging for data. I think that's their plan. I think it's quite a smart move.
I think it is a very smart move, especially if you look at households with families. I mean, we know how kids like to chew through YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And something like this, you know, it really makes a lot of sense to bring people on board onto your copper network if it's such an accessible thing already, and we know it is. And let's be honest, I mean, I love my 10 meg ADSL service and it works well, but if we can restructure some of those, if this could lead to restructuring of some of the pricing, especially taking the telephone element out of it, you know, we could be looking at Telkom slightly differently again, saying, you know, you guys really want to help us, or at least help the cause. I think it could be a good move.
But in this day and age, it's becoming increasingly less relevant to have a dial tone service on your fixed line. I mean, especially if you're going for a high speed connection, you can just put an IP phone service on top of that.
But who uses a landline phone still? I mean, I'm sure there would be a lot of people, a lot of households that still
businesses do. Businesses still do it, use landlines, and I suppose there are households who still, you know.
Households. I don't know anybody that's.
Probably with older people.
Maybe.
I mean, I know in the complex I live in, the chairman of the body corporate still phones me on my. Phones using his landline all the time. In fact, sends me faxes, which arrive in my email.
Does he also make use of 7 Rand call more time? No, but a lot of people that I know don't. Most people that I know don't have their phone plugged into their Telkom. It's become a non-issue.
It's legacy, and even Telkom admits it. When I was talking to Pranesh Padiachi this week, he said that Telkom is. When they're rolling out fiber now, they're not providing a telephone line service with that. If you want it, sure, it's an additional add-on, and I'll give you a VoIP service.
That's cool. That's good enough.
On a 100 megabit per second fiber service, you don't need a legacy line. You just use voice over IP.
Yeah. And also, you don't. Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot more sense to move away from it. And I think cell phones have really, just taken over that part of the market. You know, for those people that still want to. A home phone or a landline phone, to become an optional extra. You don't have to force everybody to pay for it.
Yeah. I had the opportunity this week actually to go and visit Telkom's new headquarters in Centurion. They used to, anyone who's ever visited their old building in downtown Pretoria, looks like an old government fortress just an old government edifice of concrete and a completely impersonal. They've moved to Centurion, and the place is just a huge construction area, but looking good. I mean, I walked in there, and it was a buzz about the place. A lot of energy, a lot happening at Telkom. I think what the CEO and his top management team have done there in the last 2 years has been quite remarkable. But they've changed everything, and they're still continuing. Possibly going to buy Cell C now.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez, and their buildings in Pretoria, have they moved away from them completely?
They've moved out of them, yeah. They've been sold. I believe someone in government, government has bought the buildings, and they've now moved their entire campus to Centurion, which is now one big construction site. But they've got their NOC, their National Operations Centre there. Telkom Mobile's been there for a while, and they're moving into a new head office building there, which is where all the construction work is happening.
A lot of interesting things coming from them. So obviously, new rejuvenation of energy from their side. New building,
very interesting to see.
New feng shui. I think it could work well.
I think once Telkom gets all of its issues out of the way, they're going to be quite a formidable competitor. But they had a lot of issues that have been built up over a decade or more. They've had to clean out. But this new CEO Sipho Maseko has done an incredible job of really clearing out the rubbish and the problems that they had there. And putting the company on a new direction, and I also get the impression he's not the sort of guy who's going to stick around forever. I think he's got greater ambitions.
Make a change and move on.
Yeah, he might be there for another year or two, but he's the sort of guy who's come in, and I think he's going to move on to something bigger. I get that impression.
Interesting. I'll definitely keep an eye on that one.
Right. What's next? Alan, not Craig. Not to be confused with the other Alan, not Craig, who's his father. Talking about Junior here. Ex-iBurst MD, ran Mixit for a while. What else did he do? He was started a whole lot of businesses. He's obviously the son of the former Vodacom CEO.
So does the free Wi-Fi project.
He's got the free Wi-Fi project, which he started a couple of years ago, called Project Seaswear, which is... Not really free, of course. It's free to end users, but city residents are actually paying it through their rates and taxes. But it's been quite a success, and they've rolled out free Wi-Fi right across Pretoria now. And just last week or the week before, I went through to the launch, debuted some new services as well, voice calling over the network for free, with breakout offered if you want it. And they're also offering something called, I forget what it's called, I think it's called Wi-Fi Drive-In or something. And you can go to designated hotspots within the city with your device and tap into free movies. Oh, sit in a park and watch a movie on your tablet or whatever. Yeah. So he's done quite well there. But he announced earlier this week his new business, which is called HeroTel. And it's the amalgamation, what's been created through the acquisition of two wireless internet service providers, one based in Stellenbosch and one based in George. And he wants to become a big player in the WISP, wireless internet service provider industry. But he's got big ambitions, and I think Lot Greg Jr. has always had big ambitions, and he wants to consolidate, not buy necessarily, but certainly help consolidate the industry under, I think they're calling it the Hero Alliance. He estimates, I forget the number, something like 200 wireless ISPs around the country.
Sure.
All mainly servicing small markets, you know, small towns and areas. And he wants to, they don't, none of them, he says, has the sort of power to market themselves on a national scale and really, you know, take the fight to the big incumbent operators. He wants to do that through HeroTel, and he says he started a process of talking to all of them. And he wants to use what he's calling the Hero Alliance, single brand, to amalgamate all of these guys and give them a voice, and allow them to compete on a national scale, even if they're only really competing, you know, locally, through a national brand. And it sounds like a smart idea, and he's got the backing of some pretty powerful backers. Michael Jordan, the ex-CEO of FNB, is an investor. As is Mike Pfaff, who's the former CEO of Rand Merchant Bank. So he's got some heavy hitters behind him, and he's launching the service, launching the company commercially, or the service commercially, in April 2016. So it's still a good 7 months away, 8 months away. But he's certainly ambitious, and it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on with this. He certainly has a lot of experience in Wi-Fi, which is what most of these WISPs use.
Yeah, definitely. And apply their strengths in various aspects of that. I think, it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And unlike Project Isizwe, this is a for-profit venture, whereas Project Isizwe, he says, is non-profit.
Non-profit, yeah.
Well, it's registered as a non-profit, so it is, yeah. But we'll keep an eye on that one. He's, I think Alan Lockraig is a very interesting character in this industry, and... he's already. I mean, he's controversial in some respects as well. His tenure at Mixit wasn't without controversy, but he's ambitious, and you know, I think he's got every chance of success. So good luck to him. Well, what else? Interesting moves. Did you see the piece that Toby Shapshak wrote this week on Forbes about ShowMe, the fast growing a Chinese vendor that some people are calling the iPhone of China?
Yes.
It was quite lacking in detail, but what struck me as really interesting is that there's a new business that's been created to do this thing. It's called Mobile in Africa, or Mobility in Africa, and it's going to be headed up by a president called RJ van Spandonk, who is of course best known for his role in Core Group, which is the big Apple distributor. Now, Core Group has never distributed the iPhone. Apple's always gone direct to the cellular operators. In fact, opened an office here to service those operators over the last, in the last 8-9 months. It raises all sorts of questions, and I've sent questions through to Core Group for RJ, and they haven't responded, asking what this means for Core Group's relationship with Apple and what it means about Apple potentially expanding its role in the South African market. You know, the fact that they've come in here now and have a formal office with a formal GM to service mainly the mobile operators initially, but does it mean that they're slowly but surely looking to expand their presence in the South African market, and what does that mean in the longer term for the core group? And it's all all speculation, and core group isn't saying anything. But the fact that RJ van Spaandonk, who is a key player in the core group, is heading up this new business, which is bringing in probably Apple's biggest competitor in China, Xiaomi devices, and they get rave reviews, Android devices, and selling them in Africa, including South Africa. What does this say about Core Group's relationship with Apple?
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to be a long-lasting relationship, if that is the case. I mean,
one can only speculate, because no one's saying anything. But
Look, I mean, it's a good plan B if Apple's decided to come into the country and they've been notified that.
Has Core Group been notified that that Apple's going to sell direct? I can't see that happening. Core Group is being so good for Apple, but maybe they want to.
Apple is Apple. When they make decisions,
they just move into the market. Maybe they've decided, well, we need to have a direct presence in Africa somewhere.
And they need to own the footprint here. I think the legacy that comes with Core, as good as what it was, it's always going to be not the original Apple footprint on the continent. And if we look at Apple's previous kind of movements throughout the world, I think their first move, you know, it's about time for them to set up shop. Whether it could have been with the Core or not is kind of, you know, that's not the argument. Apple would probably want their own their own face down here.
Yeah, but if they come back into this market on a full scale basis, wouldn't the best move be for them to buy Core Group? Because then they get the retail footprint, which they can just rebrand as iStores, as Apple stores.
Yeah.
They they've got the people on the ground. They've got a team of people who know how to distribute Apple product on the ground. Why don't they just buy it and make them part of Apple? Just buy Core and call it Apple.
Yeah, that's a good point. Wouldn't they have perhaps done that already? That's why the Xiaomi move's happening.
Who knows?
Speculation.
It's all speculation. And I tell Core Group or Apple, gives us some insight. I guess we're not really going to know. But we'll keep pressing it and see what we can find out. But certainly a very interesting move. And Xiaomi's phones get rave reviews. I don't know if you've ever seen one.
But not in the flesh, but I've definitely seen online and heard of a lot of good feedback on it.
Yeah, they look great. I've only seen photos of them. I've never had the chance to play with one.
But it's about time for a brand like that to really make waves in the cellular industry, because, I mean, these guys already manufacture the devices for most of the world. You know, it's about time that, you know, the Chinese kind of market gets the upper hand on some of these models, I think, you know, really making it their own.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. But interesting one. I've read a lot of background on the company, and their battle plan is clearly emerging markets. They've expanded into, I think, it's the Philippines, Indonesia, and the biggest market they've expanded into, India. And I guess Africa is the next logical place to come. I look forward to playing with some of the devices and seeing what they're all about. But everything I've read about them suggests they're doing great things. They're probably going to give Huawei a big run for their money when they come into this market.
Those are going to be big rivals for sure.
Yeah. Cool. What else? So let's talk about Apple, actually. Lots of rumors at the moment. They've set a date, 9th of September, for the launch of the new iPhone. Rumored to be called the iPhone 6S and the iPhone 6S Plus. No real surprises there. Also talk, Rachat, of a smaller iPhone.
Yeah, so there's talk of iPhone going back to the 4.7-inch, 4.5-inch screen size, which I think a lot
of... 4.7 is the current, is the current size.
4.4-inch.
4.4.
4-inch, no.
Because the original iPhone was 3.5, and then it went to 4, and then the iPhone 6 went to 4.7.
Yes.
And 5.5 with the Plus. So if they're going to do an iPhone Mini, then I would imagine it would have to be less than 4.7 inches.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be the iPhone 4-inch. I will just quickly look it up just to confirm. But apart from that, we're certainly not going to see anything new in terms of look and feel. And something we've seen from a lot of other manufacturers, they'll kind of keep the...
This is incremental. We know this about Apple now. They do a big release and then an incremental release, a big release and incremental release. So we're in an incremental this year. So we probably should not be expecting fireworks on the 9th of September.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we also probably shouldn't be expecting an iPad.
Yeah, that's what all the rumors are suggesting. And certainly there have been no leaks of iPad specs or anything, which we usually see on the various sites, EverLeaks and all that sort of stuff. So the talk is no new iPad this year. Well, apparently there may be a new iPad mini. There'll be no new full-size iPad, and that's because Apple's all getting geared up for the iMac. What are they calling it? The iPad Pro.
iPad Pro, yeah. That could potentially be a game-changer.
12-inch rumored.
Yeah, yeah. And I think long overdue. I mean, how many years have we been having those rumors of an iPad Pro? But other things that they're looking at, that we're looking at for the new iPhone, obviously, potentially a taptic feedback, taptic engine, at least in Force Touch, something we've seen
borrowed from a MacBook. Yeah.
Have you played with it much?
I haven't had a chance to even look at it yet.
I've been to the Mac store to try and like it doesn't to just to play with it and just to feel it. It doesn't really blow me away
as much.
Maybe I'm just setting my ways, and because I think the other thing that puts me off about the new MacBooks is the keys. I'm not a big fan of it.
I was chatting to Craig Wilson, who used to work at Tech Central, now working over at Stuff HQ, and he was saying that he's played around with the keyboard on, and it doesn't grab him at all. Mm. He says he doesn't have the sort of feedback that you get from a regular MacBook keyboard. He says it isn't as much play with the keys, and you're not quite sure you're actually pressing them.
Exactly. When you have, I mean, especially we write a lot, so your fingers hover over the keys. You know where it is, and when you press it, you know it's been pressed. You know, and you can actually be forceful when you type. With a new MacBook, I find even if you press it hard, you don't have that satisfaction of a button press. I mean, it's obviously a marvelous piece of technology the way they designed those little butterflies.
It's an amazing piece of engineering. But I would never buy one, not with one port on the side.
Yeah, no, it is. Even if you get an adapter,
I think Apple was just trying to prove a point with that thing.
Look, I mean, as a consumer product, that could potentially be the way things are going. You know, if somebody's just writing a few mails, you know, typing in your old web browser, that kind of thing.
I suppose if you're not a power user like us, you don't need an HDMI port and USB ports and memory card readers and all that sort of stuff, then maybe.
Yeah,
If you're... I don't know. If you're Edith Fenter and you just go out to lunch, for example, and you just want to check your mail, and be seen with the new MacBook, maybe that's the target
also,
the new
MacBook, I mean, that's always going to be their flat. Well, it was kind of a showpiece for them. Yeah. And the technology is going to roll down to more affordable devices in the coming years. And then, you know, that'll certainly become mainstream. And you know, your average consumer would probably love that. You know, it's an affordable device. It's thin, it's light. How many people need more than one port? You know,
I don't know.
We definitely need more than two. I mean, two of my MacBook Pros already. Not enough. Yeah. I need a USB hub.
Yeah.
If I look at people around me, just the average consumer, I've never seen anybody plug in anything other than a USB stick. So. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that.
Yeah. Remember at one stage you used to walk into a coffee shop and every notebook you saw had a 3G
type? The 3G, the long one, the big one.
You don't see that anymore, hey?
No, not at all.
You don't even see that anymore.
People, it's really largely around your phone sharing your internet connection and Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi hotspots.
Or using a Wi-Fi dongle, Wi-Fi type device.
Yeah, that too.
But those things, I remember I used to, when the first LTE ones came out, I plugged this thing into the side of my PC, I can't remember what I was using at the time, and I watched the battery life go.
Do you remember the PCMCIA cards?
I do.
That little antenna in it.
I do. I remember the first iBurst ones.
Oh, yes.
Shipped like that.
Yes.
As these PCMCIA cards just slid into the side of your computer.
Oh, man.
They came out around about the same time that PCMCIA was heading out of the market.
Yeah, that was a massive miss in technology.
Yeah.
The USB modems with a big full-size SIM card. Yeah. Interesting.
Do you know what PCMCIA stands for?
No.
I don't know what it really stands for, but the joke is that it stands for people can't memorize computer industry abbreviations.
That's good enough for me. And just to end off the iPhone 6 rumor conversation we had, obviously talks about a better camera.
Oh yeah, of course. 12 megapixels, I'm hearing.
Yeah.
From 8 at the moment.
It's going to be impressive to see. I mean, 8 on my iPhone is very good. Mm. You know, practically, you probably don't need more. But it's always good to see these guys innovating and kind of pushing the boundaries of what it can do. And
of course, we've got the big IFA conference coming up in Berlin next week. And all the Apple rival manufacturers are going to be obviously coming out and showcasing their latest creation. So I expect we're going to see some interesting attempts by some of the other cell phone manufacturers to preempt whatever Apple's coming up with now. So I think IFA is going to be an interesting one to watch this year.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Anyway, speaking of Apple, I've had a couple of emails from listeners to the show complaining that we're not available in iTunes anymore. I'm fully aware of that. We've changed our service provider for our podcast to iono.fm, which is a great service, by the way. Go to iono.fm, literally, in your web browser to check it out. But it's a great way of distributing the podcast, and you can subscribe to all the feeds there, etc. We provide the RSS feed as well for subscribing in the podcast show notes. But the long and the short of it is that the old podcast entries on iTunes, I have lost the password. I've attempted to contact Apple to recover that password with no joy. I don't know what account I used to create it with, but it's unrecoverable. So I'm in the process of recreating the Talk Central podcast on iTunes, but it's got some funny rules around image sizes, which I'm busy figuring out how to fix on the iono.fm side. So I'm in the process of fixing that, but I'm hoping that we'll be back on iTunes, not for this episode, but hopefully for the next episode. Once it's up there, I'll let everyone know about it.
Good stuff.
Cool. Right, let's move on to our regular features. Winner and losers of the week. We don't actually have a winner this week. No one really.
No, nobody deemed worthy enough.
And I think it's right if we don't try and force the issue and try and come up with one. So if no one's obvious, we won't pick anyone. We don't have a winner this week. Do you want to pick up the loser this week, Rafa?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've all heard about this over the last week or two, the Ashley Madison saga. And without a doubt, the loser has to be Ashley Madison users. And I still maintain for both senses of that word. But, being fooled into thinking you are having relations with a bot and just cheating your...
Oh, they are having a relationship. Yeah. I mean, I love the report that came out a day or so ago saying that the vast majority, I forget the exact percentage, but it was something like 99% of all users on Ashley Madison were men. So all these interactions and conversations that were going on can't have been with women.
Real people, yeah.
They must have been with bots.
And also, I mean, a lot of...
Or Ashley Madison call center agents.
Call center agents. Ashley Madison.
Outsourced to India. They're sitting there having a conversation with some sweaty teenager in a call center in India.
That's totally plausible.
But, Ashley Madison, what a disaster. I'd be very surprised if that company survives.
No, I can't. There's no way it can survive after this. And also, I mean, there's two other things. A rumor came out that, there were some articles that I read where Ashley Madison actually employed women to create and post, obviously, profiles under their own names.
Oh, really?
So you'd have women that just, you know, string people along. And secondly, apparently there was a feature where you could pay to have your details permanently wiped from their service. And that was never done. So all those people that paid to have their details removed and got leaked, I mean, they're probably going to be in for a lawsuit over and above.
Yeah, class action. I think there is a class action happening, I seem to recall. But what a mess. But what I mean, if you're stupid enough to use a service like that.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's not Tinder, but...
loser of the week. Both Ashley Madison and Ashley Madison's users, actually.
Oh, yeah.
What's your pick this week, Rafa?
So, there's a website I've really been enjoying the updates over the last few months. I've been quietly enjoying it. It's called Brilliant Maps. And it's a beautiful... It's just beautifully contented... It's a website with beautiful content, just all about maps, different types of maps, whether it's a map that uses political data, whether it's maps that use financial data, or just interesting things of where people live, for example.
Oh,
we're just opening the one of there's Australia, half of Australia lives here, and you have a map of Australia and highlights of where people actually live. So you can see vast majority of the continent isn't being...
It's because the middle section is 50 degrees.
It's a desert.
Full of kangaroos.
Yeah, yeah. But really interesting data, the way that they using data on the maps too is very interesting. I've been enjoying the
Jedi. What is that one? Jedi what?
Oh, Jedi Knight population of the UK. In 2011, Jedi Knight population, and it shows you where in the UK Jedi Knight.
There seems to be a big concentration up in the middle of Scotland for some reason.
The map above shows many self-proclaimed Jedi currently living in the UK. The Jedi census phenomenon can be found around the world. They're very interesting. So this is the kind of thing on the URL is brilliantmaps.com. And if you're into maps and data, it's well worth checking.
Oh, that's
There's
awesome.
A few really interesting things in there.
That's fantastic. And has it got an RSS feed? I'd love to get that through RSS.
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to go check that one out.
Yeah, it's got it.
Britain Island drawn using pubs.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Just so every pub is a dot.
Wow, that's incredible.
And you actually see the continent, yeah.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. So most pubs are in London, obviously.
Yeah, you can see that.
Remarkable. That's a very cool website.
Brilliantmaps.com.
Cool. I've got quite a cool pick this week as well. It's an app called Push Bullet. It's been around for a while. It runs on multiple platforms, including Android and iOS, possibly others. I haven't checked. You also install it on your desktop, on your Mac or on Windows. And what it does is, once they're installed, you're working on your computer. Whenever you get a notification on your phone, it pops up on your screen. I know Apple's got something similar to this that they introduced with the latest Mac OS X. But
it only recalls the messages.
Yeah, this is I think a much more robust and feature-rich offering. And actually allows you to do stuff on your PC. So if, for example, an SMS comes through, it pops up on your screen, and you can quickly reply to it. Same with a WhatsApp message even, and you don't have to log in via WhatsApp web. Nice. So it's connected directly with your device. The WhatsApp one I find particularly useful because running WhatsApp on a desktop is a pain.
It is a pain.
So... you know, once you get a message on your phone, you want to pick up your phone, check your WhatsApp, because it interrupts what you're doing. Check your phone, then type in the message on the screen, which takes forever because you're using an on-screen keyboard.
When
you're sitting in front of your computer, someone pops you a WhatsApp message, just hit the reply button and just type a message and hit send. And it doesn't really interrupt the flow of what you're doing.
That's very cool.
And it works for everything. I mean, and the cool thing about it is you can mute certain apps. So if you don't want your notifications of your email, for example, coming on your desktop, because you could probably get a notification through Outlook or whatever your mail app is already, you can simply mute it in Push Bullet so you don't get the notification from your phone. And it works brilliantly, and I think it's fantastic because if a WhatsApp message comes through, you can quickly see if it's urgent or not. If it's not urgent, you just hit the dismiss button and reply to it later on your phone. It's one of the best apps I've used. Not be too worried about privacy because it does require access to many aspects of your phone and to your apps and stuff, and you never know what the company's actually doing with that information.
But it kind of needs access to that.
It does. It does, exactly.
It's not like anything malicious, I think.
I don't think it's malicious, but it's certainly not malicious anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's got millions of users around the world, so it's worth checking out. Go check it out. It's called Push Bullet. First of all, install it on your phone, then install it on your desktop through the website, check it out. It really is one of the most productive apps I've used in a long time.
I can see just on the website you can share links and files too, which are with macOS you can obviously do it with AirDrop, but AirDrop is so finicky. I mean, you can't get it from your Mac to your
PC
to your phone. So this would be a very good solution for that, I think.
Yeah.
I'll definitely check it out.
I haven't tried the file drop thing yet, so I can't comment on how good it is, but it does allow you to do that. There are a lot of other features in there which I haven't mentioned. It's a very feature-rich app, and it's been around for a while. I only discovered it recently. Go check it out.
I'm going to play with it too. Nice.
Great stuff. I think that's the show for today.
Yeah, on this beautiful summer's day.
Beautiful summer's day in August.
Almost September. Almost September, yeah.
Anyway, it must be global warming or something. Anyway, as always, if you've got any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from Rafa and myself, have a good weekend. Cheers.
Ciao.